It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
The Republican National Convention wrapped up this week, and Donald Trump now carries the presidential banner for the GOP. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The path to Donald Trump's acceptance speech this week was at times a rocky one. Republican National Convention saw some floor fights, the absence of major Republican Party leaders, a scandal over plagiarism, and boos when rival Ted Cruz failed to endorse the party nominee. At least that is what dominated much of the news cycle as Republicans met in Cleveland. And there was also a good deal of sharp criticism at the convention of the presumptive Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, with chants that she should be, quote, locked up, echoing through the hallways. And of course, next week, the Democrats will get their chance in the national spotlight. In our studios to assess where the party is and how the convention went, we have some Republicans who have been watching the events of the last week. Dr. Mark Edney, he's a vice chair of the Wicomico County Republican Central Committee. Also, David Gosley and Ann Prettingham-Suthowski, who are members of the Central Committee. And the former chair of the committee, John Barkovich, our returning champion here. So anyway.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, a couple of things. I'll start with, obviously, with the nominee's speech. The word I kept on hearing is from the pundits and so on, even some Republicans, was dark, to say the least. Now, there were some, by the way, ran across some Republicans who said they thought that he nailed it. So starting with that, David, I'll start with you. What was your impression, and is dark an appropriate characterization of what you heard?
I think he projected the feelings of most of the Americans in a very eloquent way, and touching on all the major bases. He did he knocked it out of the ballpark.
And what about you, John?
Well, I think doom and gloom is the word that they used, and I think that reflects, the as David has said, the feeling of this country when you look at the polls and the people who say that they're dissatisfied with where America is, they're dissatisfied with their leadership. I think that's what he was trying to reflect, that dominant feeling in America that things are just not where they're supposed to be. We see the ISIS crisis. We see Black Lives Matter with cops being shot in the street. We see incomes not going up. And that is doom and gloom from my point of view. And I think Donald wanted to address that. I think that's... The key for him was to say, I know what's bothering you people in America. I understand your concern. I understand your worry. And I'm going to be there to address it. And that's what I thought he made the big point about, is I'm going to be there for you. He wasn't there last night for the Better Business Bureau. He wasn't there for big business. He was there for the people. And I think that's going to carry him forward with lots and lots of people who may not have even thought about voting for a Republican for president, are now thinking that this might be just the man we need to turn things around for me and my family.
And what about you?
I've been a Trump fan since 1993.
Is that right?
I had the privilege of meeting Donald Trump at a conference that he sponsored in Atlantic City. And I can remember on Saturday evening, he's standing in front of the group with a little girl in his arms. And that little girl, Tiffany Trump, was one of our speakers this past week. I mean, cold chills go up and down me seeing how she had grown up. And then on Sunday morning, he hosted a brunch. And the one thing that I remember about Donald Trump is that he went from table to table. There were probably about 125 people there. He spoke to each of us individually, and wanting to know our concerns, where we were from, and a little bit about us. And he was so genuinely concerned about us. And I said to my husband, it's not if he's going to run for president, but when. And that was in 93. And for about the last 8 or 10 years, I have listened to him every Monday morning at 7 o'clock on Fox and Friends. So I've been following him for quite a few years. And my comment is, go Donald, we need you.
And what about you, Dr. Edney?
Yeah, thanks, Don. What I was going to say is that one of the reasons that the Trump campaign has turned into a movement, you hear this called sort of a movement. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that it's a movement is because he's been so honest with the American people. He's brutally honest. And he's so honest, and he's not a politician. He's so honest that some of the things he says doesn't fly well with the left. In fact, some of the things he says doesn't really play well on the right either, because he goes right down the middle and says, this is the way it is in America. You know what? If it was dark, it's because there is darkness in America. And the American people appreciate honesty. There's a lack of social cohesion, race relations. This administration over the last 8 years has played on differences amongst us. And that is, you're seeing that play out with police relations, with minority communities. There's a lack of social cohesion. The economy's struggling. There are no jobs out there. There's a lot of darkness in the country right now. Okay, that doesn't mean America isn't great. He wants to bring America back to a better place. And so, yeah, there was a lot of dark stuff to talk about, but I think he very effectively created a pathway through that and created a vision for how we're going to get better. And so he may be guilty as charged that it was dark, but I think it had to be done, and I think the American people appreciate that it was done.
And understand it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, because one of the things that's striking, and people have referenced this, is to Ronald Reagan. Obviously, the Morning America in 1984, but even when he was running in 1980, he talked about government being the problem, but he presented a much sunnier vision for America, that the people, we could all do it together. We just need to make some changes. The thing that was so striking about what I heard from Trump in particular was that he talked about all of these things being terrible, and that he was going to come in and fix them, that he personally, not we as Americans, but he was going to come and fix them. And it wasn't that sunniness that, at least I remember from Reagan, even if you disagreed with Ronald Reagan, there was an optimism about him. What about that? I'll start with you, Dr. Edley.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a huge amount of optimism, and some of this is rhetoric, and Donald Trump's rhetoric is not like any other politician's rhetoric, because he's not a politician. And so he gets held to task for sort of saying things that a normal politician wouldn't say. Of course, he can't go to Washington and single-handedly do all of these things. But what we've seen demonstrated is he is the kind of man, he has conducted his life, he has conducted his business in a collaborative way. He's built one of the biggest real estate businesses in New York, because he's a strong leader, and more importantly than that, he's a collaborator, and he understands people. Mm-hmm. So he's going to go to Washington and collaborate with Congress. We've got three branches of government, and they're all, you know, co-equals. And so to get anything through Washington, you need to collaborate, you need to make deals, and you need to consult with people who disagree with you. Donald Trump's going to do that. So when he says, I'm going to change X, Y, and Z, we're hearing about his intent. But I have no doubt that he's going to carry that intent to Washington and make good on everything he's talking about.
John, let me put it another way. Is anger enough?
Is anger enough?
I'm just putting that out there for you.
Well, I guess anger can be a driving force. And if you're angry about your status and you believe that your status is partly due to decisions made by politicians, then I think that's what Donald is trying to address. I understand your anger, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something about it. And I think that's what people have been searching for, is that leader who's going to step forward and say that things are bad. Because the current administration doesn't say things are bad. They try to put this rosy picture on everything, employment, wages, trying to raise the minimum wage to $15, which is going to be a catastrophic decision. So I think that the people are angry about what's happening. They're angry about people being slaughtered in a nightclub in Florida. I think they're angry about cops being shot on the street. Mm-hmm. I think they're angry about those things. And Donald steps forward, recognizes their anger, and says, I'm going to do something about it. He's not asking them. He's saying, I'm going to do something about it. Now, he's going to require their support. He can't do anything by himself. That's understood. But what he says is, I'm going to put that flag in my hand, and I'm going to go crusade against the things that I think are wrong in America. And those things that he thinks are wrong in America, a large majority of the population agrees with him. And that's what they're looking for, a leader.
And one of the things that struck me about last night's presentation, because we also had Ivanka as the who introduced him. And Ivanka's speech was much more optimistic. I mean, as she talked about, obviously, and particularly she focused in on women's inequality in terms of income, and said Donald Trump's going to change the labor laws. I don't know how that's going to go over with businesses and corporate America, but nonetheless. But she seemed, it was almost as if I was looking at it and I'm saying to myself, you know, some of this I could be hearing this next week somewhere at some time in the Democratic convention. She seemed to be much more positive as opposed to the than the main event, as it were. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean,
I thought all the Trump children did very well, especially Donald Jr., and I hope we're going to be hearing more from him in the future. But I wanted to comment on some points that Mr. Trump made in his speech last night, in that he said, "We are a country of law and order. This violence must cease and come to an end. Safety first. We must think of our citizens and the safety of all of our citizens." And another point that he made is that we cannot afford to be so politically correct. And I think this is one reason the ordinary citizen, people that I know in my bridge club, my church circle, like about him, because he is saying things that the ordinary citizen is a little hesitant about voicing. And that we must secure our borders, and that we must deal with the illegal situation that we have here in this country. And I was really moved by the mother of the Border Patrol agent who was killed, and other people who have suffered on the hands of the illegals in this country. I think he wants to unite us and let us be one America.
David, what's your assessment about this contrast between light and dark, between Reagan on the one hand and Trump's speech, at least on the other, that there just seems to be this sort of night and day kind of thing. Now, maybe we'll hear more, I guess, I don't know, from him later on. But there does seem to be that contrast, which seemed to me was one of the big winning virtues of Reagan when he ran.
I don't call it black and white.
Mm-hmm.
What Donald Trump is doing, he's saying things that all the people in the United States are saying privately themselves and are afraid to come out because of the political correctness that's going on in this country today. He is voicing the concerns that I've got, the concerns I've got for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. And I'm afraid for what they're going to have and what they're going to inherit, if they're even going to inherit a country. I came up and I call some of the best times that we had in the country, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And yes, we had World War II. I remember my cousins being brought home from the war in the gray caskets. We housed the Honor Guard in our home for their burial. I've been through that. And the law and order part, seems like it's whatever feels good is out there and being done now. And we can't survive like that. We are a nation of laws, and above all, the Constitution of the United States. And when we forget the Constitution of the United States, then where does that leave us as a country? And I don't think it's black and white. I think he's just projecting what everybody feels and in some cases are too afraid to say.
Well, the other thing is that, remember, 1980 and now are so much alike in terms of when Reagan was running after 4 years of Carter. At that point in time, interest rates were going through the roof. The economy was staggered. We had hostages in Iran, and there was anger in the country that things weren't going the way they should. And I think that's the same situation we have now. Different problems, but the same situation. Americans realize things are just not right, and they want somebody to change it. And I think that's what Reagan was able to accomplish in 1980 when he came forward with his plans. And I think that's what Donald Trump is trying to do as well. And I think there are some similarities. The situation is much the same, and I believe the outcome is going to be much the same.
Another thing I think, Mark and I are both Air Force. I was in Air Force long before he was, of course. But the military has been forgotten. Our veterans have been forgotten. Their needs are. There's no need for a veteran that served the country to wait 3 and 4 and 5 weeks for a doctor's appointment or things like that they need. And the veterans, I've got a grandson that's in the National Guard. He has to pay even for the basic stuff when he went to Afghanistan that we used to take for granted when we went into the military. They were issued to us. They're not even issued to them anymore.
I want to play on with what David just said. To me, one of the most impressive speakers the entire convention was Marcus Luttrell, who is known as the Lone Survivor. And I think the quote that he made sums up everything that David just said. Quote, "The hell that veterans come home to should not be the hell that they came from." And I think the veterans problem, the problem that veterans are facing, my husband, my late husband was retired Air Force. And I think we need to pay more attention to those who have given us our freedoms that we have.
What about something that I noticed about Trump's address? There was an absence of a couple of things that I noticed. For instance, there was an absence of a reference to a temporary ban on Muslims. He talked about some temporary suspension of immigrants coming from countries that have experienced terrorism. Also, there was no reference to Mexico paying for the wall. He talked about the wall, but there was no reference. And I didn't see, I didn't hear a specific reference. I maybe forget, didn't miss specific reference to deporting 11 million undocumented immigrants. Now, it may have been implied in his remarks, but nonetheless, it wasn't. It didn't seem as if it was like out front. Talk to you, Dr. Are those significant changes that you think that the Trump campaign has made in terms of how people are reacting? Well, what do you make of that?
I don't think they're changes. I think what they are is he's slowly migrating from rhetoric to policy. He's not at policy yet, but he's making that trip now from strong rhetoric, you know, the ban all Muslims, the build a wall, have Mexico pay for it. I mean, some of these things functionally are going to be very difficult to achieve the way he initially stated them, but it's rhetoric. He's talking to the American people. Again, we're talking about being honest with Americans about a problem, and some of the words he uses are sort of very, you know, very bold and in very big ideas that now he's starting to sort of march those ideas towards workable policy. So I don't see it as a change at all. I see it as a migration to what's going to be realistic with all these things. You're exactly right. He didn't talk about a ban on Muslims, but he talked about countries from which dangerous people might be coming. We ought not to let them in until we can be assured of our safety. And this is about safety for Americans. And that's what he stands for. So we're seeing a migration, which we're all expecting, we're all hoping for. So none of this is really contrary to what he said. This is a migration towards workable policy.
Do you think he's becoming more presidential in that sense?
Absolutely.
John, one of the things that's particularly jumped out at me was that he made reference to the LGBT community. It's saying essentially he referenced it really in terms of ISIS and the jihadists, that he was going to protect this community against this kind of violence. And then after he said that and he got some applause, he said, well, I'm really pleased at the reaction because this is a Republican convention. What do you make of that? Because if you look at the platform hasn't changed much, right? I mean, it's still against gay marriage, and it has a thing which says you can, as a merchant, if you have religious beliefs or that sort of thing, that you can turn away some gay and lesbian folks. What's going on here?
What's going on here is that Donald Trump is not a old-style Republican. He is different. And that's what I've sort of been saying all along, is he is different. Yeah, the platform's there, and everybody knows the Democrats will have a platform that I know Hillary won't support.
The platform is an expression of a lot of rank and file, though.
It is an expression. It is an expression of the party. Right. And a lot of the people in the party were opposed to Donald before he got started, have been opposed to Donald, and didn't show up at the convention. So those people don't bother me. I don't think they're going to be key. What I think Donald did with the LGBT comments and the fact that we had the PayPal co-owner there who admits that he's a gay and a Republican and proud to be an American, I think he's trying to say that I am not a wild conservative. Social issues are not going to stop me from doing the things I want to do. So I think that was very important. He was talking about Orlando when he was talking about protecting them, but I think that's his argument about I'm going to take care of all the people. So that there is no community out there that should think that I'm not going to try and look out for them. And so that is really different. When his daughter got up and said, I'm an independent, it was like she says, I'm not one of those old-style Republicans. So I think he's trying to strike a new position for the Republican Party. His speech didn't have anything about taxes and all the other things we've talked about so many times at Republican conventions. His speech was about protecting the people, about doing what I can for everybody in this country.
Just to clarify one of John's points is on the left, sometimes the Republican platform of being against gay marriage gets conflated by the left as meaning Republicans are against gay people, and it's not. And that's how we get tarred. And I think this is an important distinction. Okay, the Republicans aren't against gay people. That's ludicrous. What Donald Trump is saying is that we are going to protect the dignity of every person, every American, regardless of race, creed, origin, lifestyle, because you're an American, you're a human being, you live here, you're part of us. We can have policy discussions later, but my view on a policy discussion does not color my view as you as a human being and respect for your dignity. That's what he's saying with this. And that's really how Republicans feel, despite what you will hear on the left, is we get tarred as, we get called racist and bigots and all these things,
which are not appropriate. It does seem to be shifting, though. It is a real shift.
I think that's what I keep trying to say to people is this is a big shift in the Republican Party. This convention that we saw was entirely different than any of the Republican conventions I remember. Right. It was different in that there was much more a sense of family. There was much more a sense of caring. And I'm not afraid to say that I'm going to do everything I can for a community that we're supposed to hate as Republicans. We don't hate any community. There's no community you hate. We want to take care of every American. I think that's the point you're trying to make.
Yeah.
And so to have our Republican presidential candidate say that, that's really pretty cool. And I think it's different and new and it's exciting.
David, you're going to say something?
There's two points I'd like to make. One that I never heard before was that they come out and defended religion, and they said that the pastors are not allowed to say anything, project their views, in threat of losing their tax-exempt status. Defending the preachers, defending Christianity, defending the right of people to say, no matter where they are, what their views are, I think is definitely going down the wrong path. And I myself, I'm a Christian, and I'm not ashamed of it. And anybody has a religion, they're not ashamed of their religions. But why should they be assessed a threat, wherever it came from, of losing their status, their tax-exempt status, for projecting their view, and anybody can project a view of their own. And in law and order, I remember when we didn't have to lock our back doors. And now you're almost afraid to go across the street. He's projecting a law and order candidate, which we need to get back to. And if you can't abide by the laws of the United States, the Constitution of the United States, then why are you here?
Because you're referencing the apparently in the 1960s, there was a law passed, I think it was under Lyndon Johnson, which said you can't espouse political views in the pulpit and applying to, which it applies across the board.
I'm going to add something.
Sure, go ahead. And I want to.
Back in the 50s, Theodore McKeldin was governor of the state of Maryland. He was a Republican. And one thing that everybody remembers about Governor McKeldin is that I think he spoke to every church in the state of Maryland during his two terms as governor. He had one sermon, so if you heard it in four different churches, you heard the same sermon. But he was invited, whether it was Catholic, Jewish, Christian. He went to every church and spoke. And, of course, since this law has been passed, you can't do that anymore. But people remember that from Governor McKeldin.
That's where we got our start from. Our founding fathers, where did our laws come from originally? They come from the Bible.
Because I know constitutionalists, folks who might disagree with, but I'm getting back to the convention here for a moment. One of the things that struck me, we obviously had Mike Pence as his running mate.
Yes.
And John, for the radio audience, John is excited about that. Well, one of the things that struck me by, I mean, there are these contrasts between, you know, between Pence's positions and Trump's. Just a couple examples. For instance, Pence backed the war in Iraq. Trump certainly says that he opposed it. He seems much more isolationist. Pence certainly rejected the ban on Muslims that Trump proposed. Trump has criticized intervention abroad. Pence, particularly in Libya, and Pence apparently had said Gaddafi must go, and those sort of list goes on. The thing I'm kind of interested about in all of those is, are we looking at two halves of the Republican Party? That there is an interventionist portion of the Republican Party, but then there seems to be at least this growing, at least from the Trump side of it, an anti-interventionist sense of the party. I'll start with you, Mark. What do you think? Is there, are we looking at a ticket that actually contains both elements of the party?
Well, I think Pence was a fantastic choice because I think he does counterbalance Trump in a lot of ways. I think they overlap on a whole lot of policy, but there are some important and subtle differences, and I think it reflects the diversity of thought in the party.
Right. Those differences aren't subtle. I mean, they're real stark, right? I mean,
I'm not sure.
Trade, same thing, right?
Trade, for example, you know, Donald Trump gets tarred as a protectionist, and he's going to, you know, but he's for fair trade. He's not for anti-trade. He's for fair trade. He wants better deals for the United States.
That's a bit different than the hard line position I've heard about trade. But to the point, do they represent two wings of the party, or an emerging wing of the party, as opposed to one that has been so strongly free to break? I remind people all the time that NAFTA was, yes, it was passed by Bill Clinton, but it was the Republicans who made it happen, and Republicans have been strong supporters of all these free trade agreements. So are we looking at something, or are we looking at an evolution of the party?
I think you're seeing Republican tent getting bigger is what you're witnessing. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's becoming more inclusive. There are more and more people that are saying, hey, there's a place for me under this Republican tent. And so, yeah, there are going to be some policy differences, and there are going to be some subtle, perhaps some not so subtle. But the bottom line is we're all pulling in the same direction. So I think really that's what we're witnessing. I think he enlarged the ticket the way the Republican Party is enlarging the larger party tent. So that's my opinion of what's going on.
Go ahead.
I just want to.
I know you want to jump
in
there.
I am so excited about Pence, okay? just because he does bring balance to the ticket. And I agree with your supposition that there are, at least it appears to be, these two separate, whereas we used to be thought of as a monolithic party, okay? We were opposed to all these things, and we got tarred and feathered as bigots and blah, blah, blah. And I think we now see that the leader now, who is Trump, is not one of those, okay? He is entirely different than anything we've called Republican in the past. And so I think by picking Pence, he's acknowledging that there are many Republicans who have thought like real, okay, and he wants to bring them on board. And I think by picking Pence, he's done that. Now, Pence has arguments with mostly the rhetoric that Donald was bringing forth in the beginning. And I think as Donald works more towards policy, those differences become less. And I think Pence will be the great communicator between the White House and Congress when these guys get elected. And that's what we needed. The concept always was that this guy, Trump, he's a businessman. He doesn't know anything about politics. How is he going to go to Washington and govern? I think he's going to go to Washington and govern through his vice presidential candidate, who has excellent roots in Congress, knows how Congress works, has been a governor, so he has executive experience, and he will be the leader on that front. But he does reflect the past of the Republican Party. Donald Trump, in my mind, reflects the future of the Republican Party.
Agree with you, John, 100%.
Totally agree. Sure. Okay, can I get away without talking about Senator Ted Cruz?
Do I boo now?
Right. Just to refresh people's minds, the senator certainly was invited. He had not endorsed, made no commitment to endorse. And lo and behold, when he made his speech, he did not endorse and ultimately got booed as it became aware that he was not going to endorse. Matter of fact, about the time that the boos were occurring, Donald Trump walked into the hall. I don't know whether that was necessarily planned, but nonetheless, there it was.
I hope it was planned.
Reality TV, I guess. So I was curious about, what do you make of what he did, and also what does that do in terms of his future? And what was your reaction when you saw all that transpiring? Because as you said, you were a strong Trump supporter beforehand.
I've never been a Cruz supporter. Of the 17 that initially tried for this office, he was in my bottom two from the very beginning. So he's never been high on my hit parade. He reminds me of many Cruz supporters that I know here in Wicomico County who say they're not going to vote because their man didn't get it. Well, a lot of us support people I mean, as Republicans, it's just been in the last 8-9 years that I've been able to cheer here in Wicomico County. But that doesn't mean that I did not support the Democrats who were on the county council or other offices.
Yeah.
You've got to have respect for the position. And I think he is into himself. I think he is so involved in what he wants to do that he cannot see the big picture. And hopefully he'll grow out of it. Because he's certainly acting very childish.
David, what was your reaction as you saw this happen? Because I remember I was sitting there watching, and as it got longer and as I could hear these chants, I'm saying, what are they saying exactly? And then, of course, it became apparent in Doris. What was your reaction when you saw this unfold?
Well, what got me was I liked it when Donald Trump got out there. That was the clincher to saying, hey, as far as I'm concerned, if he wasn't going to endorse the candidate, then he should have had the grace enough to not even come at all. But he did, and he should not have taken the path that he did. That was in the primaries. There were 17 people that started. All 17 people had their good qualities. It narrowed down to 3, then it narrowed down to 2, then it narrowed down to our candidate. And it's time for the party to unite. And if he couldn't unite behind Donald Trump, then what does that say for his character, that he would be able to unite any group of people if they didn't go to his way of thinking? That in my opinion, it was, if I'd have been him, I would not have done that. Just would not have done it all, because that just wasn't proper.
Mark, in terms of, I want to address this as well, is that when I was listening to the speech, and there were actually some comments about this as well, is that he seemed to lay out a conservative case. I mean, put aside the endorsement for the moment, he kind of laid it out. I mean, was that an impressive piece of it, and it just kind of went south, obviously,
he
with
did.
The,
what
with
he
the
did
endorsement.
Was he had a 1976 Ronald Reagan opportunity, which is to say, I didn't get the nomination, but here's my vision to set himself up for 4 or 8 years mm-hmm. down the road. He had that opportunity, and he blew it. And that's what you heard in the bulk of his speech, mm-hmm. was laying out a conservative vision. We all need to be together. This is what we need to do. But he absolutely blew it when he failed to give any sense of support for Donald Trump. And it wasn't completely blown then. It was the next morning when he was speaking to the Texas delegation.
Uh-huh.
They hammered him, and they hammered him. And it finally came out what's really rubbing Ted Cruz. It was the comments about his wife, and it was the comments about his dad.
Yes, I heard that.
And he cannot
also
get over that. People are calling this political suicide. I mean, the way he has handled himself in this situation, uh-huh. he may have a hard time bouncing back from this because he didn't have a thick enough skin. I mean, national politics is an adult game. And you need to have an extremely thick skin, and you need to let these things bounce off of you and move on. He didn't. He let it get to him, and it may have it may be terminal for his political career. But that's where he was. He started off trying to sort of grab that 1976 Reagan moment. He did give a decent speech, but then he went off the rails at the end of it. And then the next morning, it was complete.
The next morning was very interesting. I heard that in its entirety, and I agree with you. It all was about his wife and his father. He brought that up several times.
John, where does this leave then Cruz supporters? I mean, a number of them said, particularly on the floor, said, oh, I'm done with this.
Yes.
I don't like it. On the other hand, they said, well, I don't like it, but I still have these issues with Trump. So, and Cruz represents a particular segment of the...
He does. Cruz does represent a segment of the party, and it's a significant segment mm-hmm. of true construct of Constitution only, and some of the social issues are still rife in that group. But I think the supporters of Cruz, many of them will look at his performance and say, you know what, he's still, I understand his principles, but you know, he just went too far when he said you got to vote your conscience rather than you've got to vote for the for the Republican Party. I think many of those Cruz supporters will now say, you know what, I've given up on this guy. I understand, and I'm going to go with Trump. And I hope that's what's going to happen. I think that probably will be the result. He really went too far, and I agree. Mm-hmm. He had a chance just like Reagan did in 76, and just like Ted Kennedy did in 80. We forget that Ted Kennedy mm-hmm. did the same thing when mm-hmm. Carter beat him at the convention. He came out, never really endorsed, but was very positive. And I think Ted Cruz's initial response was very positive in terms, right. But as it got to the vote your conscience, that's code word for I can't, I'm telling you, you don't have to vote for Trump. And I think that's when the booze really started. And I think it was staged. I don't think, because the Republican, the campaign structure knew what he was going to say. They saw the vote. Yeah. And so I think that when Trump showed up at that particular moment in time, I think that was great stage to say, okay, fine, you got this guy, and here I am.
Because one of the things that struck me, and apparently they got the speech like about 2 hours, I think, beforehand.
Right.
And it struck me that if they had decided, say, if you're not going to endorse, we're not going to have you on, that would have created its own political problems. I mean, it was without
the Trump,
right?
People, I mean,
no matter what. So instead, they kind of laid. They said, "Okay, we'll let you do whatever it is you need to do," and then because the other option was worse.
Gone berserk if they didn't get a chance to
exactly.
Speak.
Yeah, and then exactly.
I think that many of those Cruz people will say they did give him a chance to speak. He didn't support, endorse, and so I really think Trump was trying to be open, and that's what I want. I want a man who's trying to be open.
By the way, one final thing on Cruz. So is this the end of Cruz's career? Because obviously he was looking at 2020. Or do you think he'll be blamed if, for instance, Trump loses? Or do you think,
There's no good for him.
No, he's gone.
He's gone. I mean, Trump loses, they can blame it on him. Yeah. Trump wins, Trump's in for 8 years. So yeah. I really think Cruz is sort of gone. But I can't see the same for Rubio. That's the other side of that coin.
Rubio comes
out of this kind of like, you know, I'm not such a bad guy, and I'm going to support the team, and I'm a team player. And so I think if there's anybody that comes out of this fray of the 17, it's going to be Rubio, because I think he did right by supporting the concept of the Republican team.
I mean, although didn't you think it odd that, I mean, it was what, 97, whatever it was, it wasn't too long. I mean, he sort of did it by video as opposed to coming. I mean,
I understand.
Does that mean anything?
Nice
as opposed to Walker, what? Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, he went out
never
full
showed.
Throat. Yeah. Right,
I thought at the last minute he'd show. No, I think Rubio, of all the other candidates, Rubio was the one that came out being the most positive for the future of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of John Kasich, he, of course, ran for president. He didn't make it. He decided he would stay away from, obviously, the convention. But he has said, in effect, I just can't support this guy. I mean, that's just the way it is. And now he didn't do what Cruz did. But nonetheless, he said, I'm done. And Ohio is a key state. I mean, it is true that, okay, the endorsements may not mean a lot, but getting the whole party machinery and the leadership involved in getting a state to turn your way is really important. And what do you make of John Kasich? Was it just a principled decision on his part? I mean, obviously and it wasn't personal. He didn't tell, it wasn't about his family or anything. It was just, he just couldn't do it.
I'm extremely disappointed in John Kasich because he was in my top three.
Hmm.
And I've followed him for quite a few years. I don't think he plans on going any higher, as he doesn't have the lofty dreams that Cruz has. So I don't think we can say his political career is done, because I think he had decided he wasn't going to do anything later anyhow. I'm disappointed in him. I think he's let his supporters down, and I think he's an honorable man. I think he's done a beautiful job in the state of Ohio, as Governor Pence has done in Indiana. I think both of those states should be held up to the other states about what a Republican governor can do. So I'm just very disappointed in him, especially since Ohio and Cleveland were chosen because of the work that Kasich had done.
David, what did you think? And was it did he do the honorable thing if he couldn't bring himself to endorse? I mean, what was your sense about that?
Well, I think John Kasich, that right from the beginning when I started watching the debates and all, he had an agenda, and if it didn't fit his agenda, he didn't want it. He would have been better off when he found out he wasn't winning hardly any states or any delegates or anything. He would have been better off to have dropped out and then gone ahead and supported the eventual nominee, no matter who it wound up being. He would have been better off doing that to secure his future as governor of Ohio. Mm-hmm. And also maybe a cabinet position or something like that on the winning ticket, because he did have a lot of experience to bring to the table. But I think he killed himself by staying in with such a small amount. Others that had larger amount, like Rubio, he dropped out. So I think he hurt himself more than he helped himself. And I think he really hurt the state of Ohio by not doing that.
What do you think, Dr. Eddy? Do you think that that his future is done? And what do you think this might mean, particularly in terms of Ohio?
Yeah,
everybody says
sure.
Ohio, right?
Because no doubt about it. Ohio's critical. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump needs to win every state Mitt Romney won, plus Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, and a couple others.
Right.
He's got to do it. He's got to kind of run the
thin,
table here.
Narrow. Right,
now we're switching to sort of to the electoral college system, which is a different animal. Okay,
so right.
It's a different animal. But he absolutely has to have Ohio. I'm not sure. You know, in the experts, you know, banter around what really is the value of an endorsement. And you can, I mean, whether or not it's there, I'm not sure it has much impact on him. Rasmussen had them neck and neck in Ohio yesterday. He's within a point. Okay. So I don't think that there's an argument that he's got all these percentage points to make up in Ohio and this is going to be some fatal blow. Would have been nice to have it. I don't think not having it is fatal at all. I think he's playing well in Ohio right now. He'll continue to play well. I suspect he's going to get a bounce from this convention. So, I no doubt Ohio's critical. I don't think the lack of Kasich endorsement is a big deal.
I mean, the way I look at Kasich is it's not so much his endorsement and people are going to come running, right. But rather he's the head of the Republican Party basically in Ohio, right. And you know how enthusiastic, because there'll be a lot of people who feel the same way. So we're just trying to
I still want to go back to the concept that this is a new Republican Party and Kasich is an example of the old Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Rubio, new Republican Party. George Bush. Jeb Bush, old Republican Party. So, I mean, there were many prominent old Republicans who didn't show at the convention. I don't think that affects Donald Trump one iota, okay? He feels so positive about what he's going to do that he'll let Ted Cruz come up and not endorse him, knowing fully 2 hours ahead of time that he wasn't going to do it. I don't think Donald Trump needs anybody other than the American people. I think that's what Donald Trump keeps saying. So when Kasich says, I'm not going to go, Donald Trump goes, oh, the hell with you. Okay. If Cruz wants to get up there and diss me, go ahead. I don't mind because I'm going to have the American people behind me. Okay. I don't need you, Kasich. I don't need you, Bush. I don't need you, Romney. I don't need you down the list because I'm going to have the American people. That's the new Republican Party, I hope.
Okay. And you've got this to look at too, the Electoral College. We've had people that have won the popular vote but lost the election of the Electoral College. So it's a fix one way or the other anyhow.
It's going to be
close. It's not the people. It should be the people's choice.
Well, but
the Electoral College went in, the people's choice went out.
But Ohio, those people that have fought for Kasich are not going to, they're not going to give up, okay? Because there's all the down ticket that still has to run in Ohio, okay? And I don't think those people are going to say, my governor doesn't support Trump, but I feel like I've got to. Because if I don't help Trump in Ohio, I'm going to end up with Hillary Clinton as my president. And I think that's going to be a driving force that won't make any difference what the governor says.
Ann?
I was listening very carefully to many of the different speeches, especially Monday evening. I thought Monday evening was just jam-packed with positive speakers. But one emerging person in the Republican Party leadership that I've been following now for a couple of years, and that is Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, whom I thought gave a very powerful speech in talking about we want a commander-in-chief who wants to win wars, not end them, and a commander-in-chief who would call the enemy by their name, and one who knows how to, of course, handle classified information. But I thought his speech moved him up and gave him a big stage for people who may not have followed him as I have for the last couple of years. I heard him speak in Washington, and he's very charismatic, and I think he has a future also. So he's one name I would like to drop. And the other one, a very powerful speech on Monday night, of course, was General Flynn. Mm-hmm. General Flynn, far as I'm concerned, is a rock star. I think the gentleman has a huge future. I don't know if he ever plans to run for office or not. He's a registered Democrat. He's about the most Republican person I know. I think someone needs to give him a change of party affiliation. But he also tells it as it is, and I think he's someone that we're going to hear about in the future.
What a turn, by the way, too. Obviously, the name that came up a lot during the convention was Hillary Clinton, to say the least. And what one would have expected that. There is some suggestion, however, that perhaps things got a little out of hand. I'll just make some references. When Chris Christie was talking, says you're guilty, we heard the refrain, lock her up. We had a New Hampshire state representative who suggested that Hillary Clinton should be put in the firing line and shot for treason. Also, Trump himself suggested that. As a matter of fact, the Secret Service apparently is looking into that one. I'm sure it won't go very far. But and then, of course, I mean, Trump himself has said that Clinton should go to jail. You have that kind of rhetoric, and a quote from Senator Jeff Flake, who reacted to this, a Republican, who said Clinton now belongs in prison. Come on, we can make the case that she shouldn't be elected without jumping the shark, end quote. I'll start with you, Mark. Obviously, we all expected Hillary Clinton to be criticized, her record to be criticized as foreign policy, domestic, how have you. But did some of these things go a little too far? Because I noticed, for example, when Trump was speaking the other night, there was a beginning of a chant of lock her up, and he just kind of like quelled it and said, well, we'll just beat her in November.
Yeah.
Did things get slightly out of hand here? What do you make of this?
Of course, the firing squad comment, of course that's over the top and out of hand. I mean, nobody stands behind that.
I missed that one.
That's ridiculous. But you know what this gets to is the American people are upset with the fact that she got away with a crime, okay? And the double standard is what irritates people. We don't like to have this knowledge, this sense that there's a double standard for the elite versus regular Americans, and that if you're elite and you have enough power and you know enough people, you can let things slide. And
you don't think the attorney, the FBI director's decision was honest?
I mean, he's a Republican. He laid out a case to indict, and then finished by saying, "I don't know any prosecutor who would bring this case."
So, what would be his motivation not to indict? I mean, he said. Right?
It's the politics involved. There are concerns about, could we find a jury who would actually take this through to fruition? And the answer is probably not, which is actually, incidentally, the same reason she probably got off in the Whitewater case. It's because they couldn't find an impartial jury. We don't necessarily need to go there. She has a
Whitewater's a long ways away.
She has a long history of subterfuge and breaking the law and not being held accountable. I mean, this goes way back with her.
I'm back in the mid-19. By the way, just for the record, I was in Washington at the time, covered the Whitewater hearings and the rest of it, dug only way too much deeply into this land deal, and the claims and so on, they didn't hold up against the Clintons. At least that was my conclusion.
No claim ever holds up against the Clintons. Not just that one. We could go into the Rose Law Firm. We can go into Vince Foster. We can go into Stand By My Man. Oh, that was
you got her going now.
I can't stop it now, can I? So, John, so what about the rhetorical flourish? Again, we expect Hillary Clinton to be sharply criticized. That's the given. But it just seemed there were people who react, even on the Republican side, this is just way too much.
Well, you have to remember where this is, okay? Yeah. This is at the Republican convention. We've got a bunch of diehard Republicans, okay? And they look at Hillary as, evil, yes, as a liar, as, from that point of view, it's not a surprise that their response to Chris Christie's indictment, okay, would be lock her up, because everything he described, I believe to be probably true. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then she probably should have gone to jail. She's not going to go to jail. She's not going to get in front of a firing squad. We all agree. And most of the Democrats that will vote for her don't care about her emails. They don't care about any of the things that she's done in the past. They're going to vote for her anyway. So I'm not surprised by that in that convention. Now, you go out on the streets, and it won't be quite as vocal as lock her up. It's still they distrust her, and I think there's a great deal of distrust there. Yeah. And they did that early in the convention, so that by the end, by the last day, Hillary was not the focus. Trump was the focus, and Trump's plan, his idea of fighting for America was the focus. So, it was a little over the top maybe, but I imagine if I had been there, I would have been there standing, lock her up on the other side of my hand because, anyway.
I know I would have.
A little enthusiasm. What about you, David? What did you make of that tonal thing that's gone? Again, this criticism is fine, but there's just, I mean, there were a number of people who said, geez, I'm shocked. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I'm not a Clinton fan, either Bill or her, either one.
So you'd have been waving the sign, too.
What is the definition of it? What is the definition of is? We'll go back to that. He was the only one that I can remember that had been impeached. But that didn't even go anywhere. But what strikes me and should strike the heart of the American people is this. Power and pull. I fly in a lot of airports and all, and two planes just don't arbitrarily meet and sit on a tarmac.
You're talking about the meeting between Bill Clinton and the Attorney General.
And then a special hearing on a Saturday. It just doesn't fly. I mean, I've been in law enforcement all my life, 36 years of it. Things like that are pre-orchestrated. There's nobody can tell me any different. And he pulled it. He said, I got you started. You owe me this. Mm-hmm. Then Monday comes out, the Attorney General's report comes out.
Sure.
So you can look at General Petraeus. What he did was like putting something on the top of an eraser on a pencil compared to what Hillary Clinton's done. How can she be trusted with America's secrets? I mean, it's blatant.
Her people don't care.
The Clinton supporters just don't care. But I think that the Bernie Sanders supporters
do care,
and I think that we're going to draw from his supporters over to our candidate and get him elected.
Okay, by the way, I want to turn to Sanders. By the way, in terms of, by the way, Petraeus, the distinction that apparently is made, no matter how you just think of how Comey did with the Clinton case, was that Petraeus actually took not only documents home, shared them with people who intentionally and classified.
No, no.
Yeah,
Petraeus broke the law.
No question.
Right. Yeah, home too, in the basement.
In terms of the Bernie Sanders folks, the main connection between the Sanders folks and Trump at best seems to me the issues of, for instance, trade or corporate influence when it comes to the government. On the other hand, I've seen people suggest that after seeing Trump, that maybe those Sanders holdouts might just run to the Clinton camp. I'll start with you, John. What about, I mean, is that really realistic? I mean, there'll be some. I mean,
who are the Bernie supporters? Bernie Sanders supporters were many millennials and people dissatisfied with the Democrat leadership, okay, and the way things have been going for the last 8 years with Obama. So those people, they are going to have a hard choice. I really believe they're going to have a hard choice between going with continuation of what's they think is wrong, i.e. Hillary with her big business contacts and the banks and all that sort of stuff, or going with an unknown factor in Trump. But I think Trump has said, I'm going to take care of everybody. And so I think if they go for Hillary, then it's same old, same old. If they go for Trump, there's a chance they will be better off. And so I have a feeling that some of the issues that Donald has spoken about are exactly the same as Bernie's were. And so I think that there may be enough of that to see many of those people go to Trump. That's my hope.
Right. Well, Dr. Daly, it does seem to me, though, that those may be some key issues that would be attractive to some of the Sanders supporters. On the other hand, a lot of them have much more liberal social views than, for instance, what's in the Republican Party. And they may say, you know, we'll try to push Clinton to be better in trade or what have you. But, you know, these social issues, particularly the Supreme Court and so on, the Republican Party just isn't mine. And so you have a potential, but it's going to slip away.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, there's some social differences. And a large part of Bernie's group is the free stuff crowd. I mean, there are people who care enough, these kids who care nothing more about free college. I want to skate through life. I want it paid for, and I don't want any responsibility. They're never going to be Trump fans because Trump is about, yes, protecting Americans, but he is about personal responsibility and providing you opportunity to be the best person you can be. That's not that that core Bernie group of people who are just, you know, climbing on because things are going to be free.
I agree. I agree with you because after Obama was elected the first term, I remember a reporter interviewing a young girl in Detroit and said, "What does this mean to you?" And her comment was, "Obama's going to give me a car." And I think that goes to the...
I think it might have been chess, but that's okay.
Yeah. Excuse me?
It might have been in jest, I think, but nonetheless.
Oh, I don't think so. No, she's very serious. She's probably also on food stamps and everything.
Well, I, by the way, just for the record, as for most people, I probably went to school for free. Because when I went to, when I was state college just like this, I paid $100 for books and $100 for fees. That was it. This is in California, by the way, in the early 1970s.
There were a lot
it's now gotten more, much more expensive.
There were a lot of Bernie supporters, though, that weren't just kids.
Right.
I mean, that, Bernie had, he had a large, I mean, when you think about it, if you looked at his crowds, it wasn't just kids looking for free rides. There were many, and those are the ones I hope for.
Right.
Those are the ones that I'm hoping for.
He had many adult supporters here in Salisbury, whom I happen to know, very faithful Democrats. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, they've never voted for a Republican. But they probably would in November because they could not support Hillary, but they did support Bernie.
I want to, before we escape, I want to talk about the Hispanic vote, a large, ever increasing amount of the electorate. As some people have noted, that the white non-Hispanic population is down, in terms of voting is down to about 70%. Big chunk of that is Hispanic votes. Mark, I'll maybe wrap up with you. Where is the Hispanic vote in all of this? Are they going to really be all that attracted to, say, the very tough immigration language that we see? Even though we know that he's talking about undocumented, that seems to be a gateway kind of issue for a lot of
Hispanics. Yeah, no doubt. The Hispanic vote's going to be critical. He's got to do very well in all of these other demographics, including minorities, African-Americans, and Hispanics. There was a fantastic speech by a state senator, and I'm blanking on his last name. He's just a Hispanic man. He gave part of his speech in Spanish, but really, I think spoke to the crowd and spoke to, see, again, the larger principles that Donald Trump is standing for, the inclusiveness. Let's get a fair immigration system. This isn't anti-Hispanic. This is about creating an economy and a country that we're proud of, where there's opportunity for minorities who come here legally to get jobs and to have opportunity. And that's the message. And that's actually a message that is increasingly resonating in minority, particularly Hispanic communities, is the ability to get ahead, to get a job, to work hard and provide for your family. And that resonates. And I think he's going to start, again, migrating towards that message. And I think it's going to have a significant impact.
Because I know that, we'll wrap this up, because I know that, as a matter of fact, I remember going to the 84 convention, and there was a lot of talk about trying to get the Hispanic vote, particularly in terms of cultural issues, the social issues. But even with the amnesty bill that was passed in 86, the Republicans still were not able to cross that. We've had a great discussion here, and we have had Dr. Mark Edney. He's vice chair of the Wicomico County Republican Central Committee, also David Gosley and Ann Brittingham Suthowski, who are members of the Central Committee, and of course our old friend John Parkum Barkovich. He's been with us. I appreciate all of you folks stopping by and chatting with us. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC-14.org.